Good afternoon. I'll call the 23rd meeting of the Ag Finance and Policy Committee to order. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. Roll call, Mr. Smith, please.
Chair Sundin.
Present.
Vice Chair Vang.
Present.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, present.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle, present.
Representative Eklund. Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R, present.
Representative Hansen J.
Hansen J, present.
Representative Cleavorn, excused. Representative Lippert.
Lippert, present.
Representative Lewick.
Lewick, present.
Representative Miller.
Miller, present.
Representative Nelson.
Nelson, present.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Hansen J., do you have a motion that of approval of the February 21st minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Are there any questions or corrections on that motion? I see none. I'm hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. Those opposed, nay. Okay, that motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. We've got a pretty full agenda today. We're not moving any bills out today, so if people have additional questions, there will be time to follow up prior to taking any final action on these. So I have the first few items. So Vice Chair Vang, please take the gavel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we are doing House File 2341. We have about 40 minutes for the first two items to the agenda. Chair Sundin, please move your first bill and feel free to begin.
Okay, I'll move House File 2341 to get the bill before the committee. Members, as mentioned earlier this session, finance committees were encouraged to hear bonding construction related provisions early in the section and then have the chairs communicate their construction related provisions to Chair Lee and Capital Investment Committee. House File 2341 is one of those affected bills. Purpose of the hearing today is to have the Ag Committee hear the request for our consideration. Before deferring to Ari, Executive Director, we have a technical amendment. And I will move that amendment, the H2341A1 amendment. This is a bill was introduced last year, and the dates need to be adjusted. This corrects the dates and asks for your support.
Okay, committee members, any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Mr. Chair, would you like to say a couple more words and move to your testifier, or?
I'll just move straight to the testifier. Presenting today will be Mr. Shannon Schlett, the Executive Director of ARI, the Agriculture Utilization Research Institute. So.
Okay. Mr. Schlett, please introduce your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Shannon Schlett. I'm the Executive Director of the Agriculture Utilization Research Institute. And thank you for having me today for hearing on this bill. This bill is working on prioritizing our needs. It's for Crookston and Waseca. We have two locations that we would like to add our footprint to, or add some footprint to for our organization. I would put a priority for today on our need in Waseca as a footprint that is more urgent in terms of needing to expand some space. We've outgrown that pilot lab facility over the 30 years that we've been in that space. We've seen continued rising demand in this co-product and byproduct value stream area. We've continued to add equipment and to serve clients in Minnesota in terms of their needs. We're currently operating in two different locations in Waseca due to that expansion. They are about a mile apart from each other. So we have one site at the University of Minnesota Southern Research Outreach Center that we've been at for many, many years. In fiscal year 19, we added about 3,300 square feet at the Clear Lake Press site in terms of setting up our equipment to be able to service clients and demand that we were seeing. Obviously, this isn't an ideal situation for us to have two separate locations that are apart from each other. And we would like to bring those under one location again and under one roof as we go forward. Our current needs, I would estimate at about 12,000 square feet for having a pilot lab facility in Waseca. We currently at the SROC site have about 6,000 square feet that we rent, and we have about 3,300 square feet at this annex site. So we'd be expanding our footprint a little bit as we would look at this expansion area. That would include offices, our pilot lab site, storage, all the things that we would need to conduct our work. And the biomass processing co-product value stream area. We haven't had a major infrastructure update in Waseca in many years, right? We've added the annex site, but that's really the only physical footprint change that we've had in the Waseca location in our 30 plus years of existence. Our last request for infrastructure was the product evaluation and sensory lab site that we added in Marshall. And that was back in July of 2017 through some bonding dollars. We did that in collaboration with the SMSU Culinology Department. So with that, I mean, we've had a great success in our co-product space over the last 30 years. We'd request this funding to set us up for right, the next 15 to 20 years to continue growing that opportunity area, making sure that we're operating in a safe and efficient manner and doing the best that we can to advance value-added agricultural opportunities. I'll stop there with my testimony, Madam Chair.
We also have Mr. Scogan here available for questions too. So I'll open it up for questions from the committee. Okay, great. Closing comments before we move on, Chair Sundin.
Okay, thank you, Chair Vang and members. I'll be forwarding these recommendations today on this and the MD bonding request to Chair Lee by the end of the week. Please let me, Ms. Connolly or myself, know if you have any comments on any of these projects that you think we might need to know about. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. House File 2341, as amended, is laid over. Next item is also related to AURI. This is a supplemental budget request. Members, the AURI supplemental budget request is a package. It is reflected in four separate bills, House File 3679, House File 3680, House File 3681, and House File 3687. Rather than move each bill separately, we thought we could just do an informational hearing, hear the testimony on the entire package, rather than moving and taking testimony on each separate piece. Since they are finance related, they will all be subject to consideration moving forward. And Chair Sundin, please go ahead and begin.
Okay, just to remind the committee, I am Chair Vang. I'm one of the legislative members of the of RE, and I really appreciate the experience and opportunity to see the good work that they do. It's just been an honor to work with these professionals, and they're shaping the future of agriculture in the state of Minnesota in a very, very good way. So regarding these bills, again, we have Mr. Shannon Schlecht, the RE Executive Director, to present.
Mr. Schlecht, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's my pleasure to share information on our supplemental budget requests to advance the mission of ARI and the work that we do for the agricultural industry across the state. The first bill that I'll mention is around a cost of living adjustment for the organization. We had a small cost of living adjustment in July 1st of 2020 for $100,000, and we'd like to have a cost of living adjustment for us going forward as well. We're requesting a 5% increase to our base budget, which would be roughly $200,000 a year to help keep us competitive with salaries and rising benefit increases, as well as rental increases as well. We work hard to control our costs, right, and put our money into programs. I think we're experiencing right through this next wave that salary increases will likely be higher than typical due to competitiveness and keeping our workforce that we really value at our organization in terms of work that they do across the state. We also, as I mentioned in my previous testimony, we've added some annex locations to some rental increases over the last couple of years that did increase our base there as well, that this would help cover. We're now at 34 employees as an organization. They are scattered around the state and many different locations, right? Our main hubs being in Crookston, Marshall, and Waseca. But we have about a third of our staff that are virtual scattered across the state as well. I'll just add that we've worked really hard in terms of attracting additional funds beyond our base appropriation. Overall, we've done that through federal grants that we've been sourcing through our fee-for-service or some project work that we've done as well in different project fees that we've implemented. And we've been looking for other grant opportunities as well to continue to add and leverage the dollars that the state provides to us to do this work. That leverage has dropped right overall. We've gone from 86% of our funding being from a direct appropriation to today. That is 73% in our current fiscal year. So we've been successful at trying to find additional funds. That's added additional capacity. Having a cost of living adjustment just helps us continue to retain that capacity that we've added while we continue to seek additional funds to further leverage the expenses that we have as an organization. So that is our cost of living adjustment request for ARI. And I'll just continue on, Madam Chair, to the next element, if that is appropriate.
Please proceed.
So the next area that we would like to propose for supplemental funding is a life cycle analysis position. This is an area that ARI is receiving many more requests around in terms of how companies are looking at their sustainability profiles, business strategies around meeting consumer demand and market needs with their sustainability profiles. So we'd like to jumpstart having a position at ARI to assist businesses that are exploring this opportunity area, how it could add value to their products that are incorporating agricultural inputs and really help them on that journey of looking at it from a business development standpoint. This service is available today, right, through a more tactical type approach with consultants and companies that provide this service. What ARI would do would be different in terms of looking at this more holistically, helping them look at the variables and what they could do to position themselves for additional market opportunities. We're also seeing, just from our conversations with industry, a long wait time where there's long queues in terms of getting this input and really trying to advance the opportunities here. We're hearing mainly input today from the biofuels industry or renewable energy industry in terms of assistance and ways that we could help them look at this holistic approach of what their sustainability profile is and what we could do to assist them in terms of their goals in terms of meeting those needs. I expect this would also expand to our other focus areas as well, as we're just seeing more and more interest around sustainability in general, and ways that we can help position Minnesota companies to meet the market needs going forward. So this would be a one-time funding for 4 years to help us jumpstart this position again. And then our goal would be that we would be able to continue this position through grants, other funding, right, and industry support as we provide that service and create awareness around it, because we do think there will be a growing demand here to support this type of work. And the next area that I will speak to is an equipment request for ARI. So we regularly add equipment to our laboratories on a yearly basis through our budget process with our board of directors. This year, we are adding well over $200,000 of equipment and upgrades to our facilities, to our normal process that we have in terms of the appropriation and other revenues that come through the organization. That said, we do see needs once in a while for some larger dollar value equipment items where supplemental funding would be very helpful. We also do source equipment where possible through other grants, through federal grants and other state grants as well, or private grants. And we also do receive donations from industry where there's synergistic goals around objectives that we can move forward and look at how we can leverage those opportunities, provide additional assistance to companies across the state. We have conducted quite a bit of market feasibility work around what needs are, and where we're seeing some gaps in terms of technical resources that we could provide to agricultural businesses. One is in the scale-up of protein products. So thinking both food and feed needs of moving from benchtop to right small commercial quantities that we can use for formulation, for doing some testing and trials. That is a need across across the industry. We did a survey in 2020 and 2021 that really identified this as an area of need and opportunity. And I think synergistic to other efforts that are going on within industry in terms of helping them with new protein products. We also see an increasing need for fermentation. We have been able to receive or through donation some equipment in this area, but there's additional support equipment that would be helpful through these funds as well, that would really ramp up our capabilities and help fill that gap around fermentation needs. And fermentation, we're seeing interest from, of course, the renewable fuels industry, as well as in the feed industry. And I think this could even apply to precision food, right, as well, in terms of looking at the fermentation opportunities and how do we support businesses that are trying to look at those market opportunities in that space. We'd also have some minor analytical upgrades as well to our Marshall Lab, where we continue to see a lot of interest in terms of supporting clients with those, I'd say, analytical needs that they don't easily see off the shelf from commercial labs, and how we can help them meet those needs as well. And then finally, there's some small biomass processing needs that we would support in our Waseca location as well, such as dewatering presses and machination machines to help break up the biomass overall. So those are our equipment needs that we'd be looking at for through the supplemental request for one-time funding. And then finally, the last item that I have is an anaerobic digestion study. I know when I provided testimony previously to the committee, we talked about our work in the anaerobic digester space. We see a real opportunity in this area, and we've seen it growing over the last year with the portable digester that we've had on site. We've seen new interest with the Natural Gas Innovation Act that was passed last year. We're seeing companies that are looking at this as well in terms of adding renewable natural gas to their customer base and having that as an opportunity as well. So we would like to partner with the University of Minnesota on doing a state assessment of where different feedstocks exist that can provide a consistent supply to anaerobic digestion, help look at the valuation of those, see how we can get smaller dairy farms to be able to participate in this, as well as egg processing facilities that are looking at adding value to their waste streams and having a stable and consistent supply of feedstocks that could then participate in the renewable natural gas market, as well as look at opportunities for digestate and how that could add to farmer opportunities and alternatives as well. So we again think this is a growing area, and we think it's an opportunity area that we would like to really position Minnesota and do that first level analysis for companies to take a deeper look, all right, at some of these opportunity areas that this state level assessment would provide. With that, Madam Chair, that's the information that I have on these supplemental bills.
Thank you, Mr. Slush, for the informative and concise presentation. I will open it up for committee questions. I will start with the first question. What's the total budget request for the package? Mr. Slush.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the total budget request of the four bills that we have is $1 million for equipment, $600,000 for the life cycle assessment, $250,000 for the anaerobic digestion, and then the $200,000 per year for the cost of living adjustment.
Okay, thank you. There are a couple questions from members. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Schleck, on the anaerobic digestion, I have two quick questions, just so I can make sure I'm on the same page. Is there recent or new technology with anaerobic digestion? This anaerobic digestion has been, as you would know, maybe not everyone in the committee knows, but has been around for many years and has been applied primarily at dairies, but some other locations with limited success. Is there new technology that's emerging that has changed that? That's my first question.
Dr. Sledge?
Madam Chair, Representative Miller, yes, it is an old technology and has been looked at for many, many years. I think what's changed is the economics of anaerobic digestion in terms of the renewable natural gas market and the low carbon fuel standards and participation in that manner that has made it more economically viable. And I think technology does continue to improve. We continue to learn, but I can't speak specifically to major changes that have occurred. We do have a technical expert on staff that joined us in July of this year that has a lot of experience in anaerobic digestion and has been very supportive moving forward with this effort overall based on his industry knowledge and work that he's done previously in industry around anaerobic digestion.
Representative Madam Chair. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Schlecht, you may have sort of answered my next question. So what I'm hearing is with anaerobic digestion, it's the emergence of whether it be tax credits, carbon credits, or things of that nature and money involved in that, that may make this financially more feasible, if that's true. So kind of that's the question, but if that's true, what is the sort of funding that we can expect for these dairies to receive if they start these anaerobic digesters?
Mr. Schlecht.
Madam Chair, Representative Miller, that's a great question overall. I know there are efforts underway right through looking at community digesters with different companies here within the state. I'm not privy to what those dollar amounts are or what those contracts might look like, but I'd be happy to follow up with you in terms of some ballpark ranges and numbers that we could come across.
Madam Chair, if I could just wrap it up. Thank you. Sorry about that. I just to follow up with that, Madam Chair and members of the committee and to AURA itself, let's make sure that we have some of those answers cleared up, because when we've run into some of these anaerobic digester things, those questions about the finances involved really need to be settled out. And especially if we start involving smaller producers and stuff, we just want to make clear where the opportunities are. So that's my only input into that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next I see is Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following up on what Representative Miller was talking about, because of legislation out west, California, especially with carbon credits, this is already taking place here in Minnesota. I toured one out in the western part of the state. Some larger dairies are combining their carbon, and it's being done already. And the thing that Mr. Schlecht mentioned that I would approve of or support is making it available to smaller operations. But I think there's some issues there with piping, transportation costs. There's going to have to be a collection possibility way to get enough volume together to make this feasible. Because right now it's only available and feasible, in my opinion, for very large operations. But it's already being done thanks to the credits being offered by the state of California and possibly also Colorado and Oregon and Washington. Question for Mr. Schlecht. You had a lot in your presentation, and I just was struck by a comment you made that you wanted to hire a life cycle analysis person, and it's already available privately, but they're very busy. So wouldn't it make more sense to let the private sector add people in this area as they see they need it, rather than having the government supported agency step in and to do a program that way? Just a comment on, if this is being done already privately, why not let them build it that way instead?
Mr. Schlecht.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, thank you for the question, the comments on anaerobic digestion as well, in terms of how we look at that in terms of participation from beyond the very large producers. Around the life cycle assessment, the difference that we are proposing would be to look at this in terms of a more early stage conversation with businesses and a more holistic viewpoint, right? In terms of how do we prepare them for this opportunity, so that they're ready to have those conversations with the private consultants and companies to really do the tactical work on those needs and to do their certifications and the numbers. I think there's a lot of knowledge and education that's needed in this space for businesses. And I think that's where ARI can play a really key role on helping educate them in terms of what the needs are and the opportunities, and then letting the private industry get them over the finish line in terms of taking advantage of that market opportunity.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. Couple more questions. Some of your funding, you know, some appears to be one-time funding, and at least part of it will be base funding and be ongoing funding. But a lot of your requests are for a four-year time period. Why so long in terms of getting some of these projects up and going?
Mr. Sledge.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, thank you for the question. Yeah, it takes time for us to find the right, I think for the life cycle assessment, to find the right individual, right? And then to find the right funding levers, right? To continue to support this position going forward through grants and industry support and other elements. It doesn't happen as quickly, I think, as we would like in terms of advancing that funding stream overall and supporting those types of roles and positions. We do think it's very feasible to do so, but I would hate to bring somebody on, right, and then not be able to provide funding for them while we make our best opportunity of making that a long-term viable position overall through third-party funds. And the other funding is 4 years to just ensure that we put our equipment in place and the facility construction as well. These are probably providing us a little bit more of a tail than maybe is needed in terms of moving this forward, but just ensuring that with supply chain backlogs and some equipment that we're already seeing, right, just moving those pieces together, having all the pieces fall into place, our goal would be to move quicker than that, but it gives us just that flexibility in case there are some challenges as we try to put those into play.
Thank you.
Next, I see is Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, Representative Anderson asked the question on the life cycle position. Just seems like an awful lot of money for $600,000 for 4 years. You answered the question, but $150,000 a year to start the conversation just seems like a lot. But you answered the question with Representative Anderson. I'm good. Thank you.
I think I have one more question from me. Mr. Sledge, how does the first infrastructure bill relates to your second lab equipment request? And if that generates a match, Mr. Sledge?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the $2 million request is for facilities and really is focused on infrastructure for our Waseca location. Overall. So really thinking of a building footprint, right, renovations that we would need to have to get everything back under one roof again. The equipment, the $1 million for equipment is really for equipment, right, or movable equipment that would go into facilities in each of our lab locations to fill technical gaps that we see for our laboratory services. So that is the differentiation between the two pieces of legislation there.
Okay, thank you. Any more questions from the committee members? Okay, closing comments, Mr. Chair?
Oh, thank you very much. It's just been an honor to be involved with the RE group. There's only one word that describes the people that they have on the board, and more importantly, the people that are working for the board. They are brilliant and dedicated. Two words, brilliant and dedicated. They do work day and night on their efforts to advance the relationship between agriculture and agribusiness and all the parties involved. They're just a resource beyond belief. So we're looking forward to moving these efforts forward.
Okay, so that is all. Thank you to Mr. Sledge and Mr. Scogan for your testimony. Let's see. Next we have on the agenda is my bill. So, Mr. Chair, I will return the gavel to you, and thank you for your presentation.
Okay, thank you, Vice Chair Vang. Time to swap hats here. You've got Microfarm Premium Assistance Program bill. We've got a few minutes to have a look at this one. Since this is a fiscal bill, we're going to lay it over for possible inclusion in the supplemental finance bill. Chair Vang, please move your bill and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 3264 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the supplemental finance bill. So House File 3264 leverages a new opportunity for small producers to utilize the new USDA microfarm insurance policy for small-scale producers. As we have seen throughout last year, small-scale farmers have been adversely impacted by the severe drought, and with the lack of insurance options, there is no safety net for farmers who experience a loss of their crops and revenue. So this bill will help jumpstart farmers to get insurance coverage under this new microfarm policy. It also directs $100,000 each to LEDC and HAFA to provide technical assistance to farmers who do not have the capacity and the technical understanding to apply for this new coverage. This is significant due to the language barrier when it comes to doing paperwork. HAFA and LEDC have the multilingual and technical expertise to support these farmers who largely qualify for this program. It is crucial we support this funding so farmers, regardless of their language skills, can get access to this funding. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will yield my time for my testifiers.
Okay, we have testifying Aaron Blythe. Would you identify yourself and offer your testimony, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Aaron Blythe, and I'm the Agricultural Program Director for the Latino Economic Development Center. And not to misrepresent the center, I'm one of only two staff that are white. We are a Latino-run organization of over 30 staff and boards of director. In LEDC, our vision is a thriving multicultural community enriched with Latino leadership, culture, and economic influence. And our mission is to transform the Latino community by creating economic opportunities for Latinos. In the sphere of agriculture, that means working within the rural communities of Minnesota. We have a strong and growing network of Latino and other BIPOC farmers that we've been working with for over 10 years now in rural Minnesota. We provide technical assistance, production assistance. We connect farmers to state resources and university resources, as well as other non-governmental organizations. And a key thing that we do is we provide access to capital. We are a CDFI, and we have a strong working relationship with Rural Finance Authority, and have done multiple loans through that to help farmers get going. The vast majority of our farmers are small farmers. They're small specialty crop producers, small livestock producers, and they have historically had a tremendous time trying to get insurance for their operations. We have tried working through other programs, but I really do believe that this microfarm policy that the USDA has rolled out this year is really a best effort so far at trying to address this issue. And as Representative Vang mentioned, 2021 really showed us with the drought how deeply farmers get impacted on this small scale, and they have no recourses for insurance. And so we do see this as a vital thing. We also know that getting access to this insurance for the farmers in our network is a heavy lift. It involves quite a bit of paperwork that they're not accustomed to doing. They don't often trust or believe that these programs are going to be helpful to them in the long run. And so what we see within this bill is sort of, this bill has been modeled in my mind off of some of the work that the dairy program did in 2019, where the state invested in helping small-scale dairy farmers get access to the dairy margin program. And from my understanding with that was a deeply successful program in allowing farmers to basically try out the insurance program without having to bring a lot of their own capital, their own investment to it. And so that's what we would like to see, is 2 years of funding premiums for farmers to say, hey, this is a program we think will work for you, and let's see if it actually does. The dairy program allowed Minnesota to be a national leader in that program. And I feel strongly that this money would allow us to be a national leader in this microfarm policy for small farmers. The money that would be allocated for LADC specifically would go directly towards on the ground work to connect farmers, get their taxes done, get the paperwork done, and then do follow up on all the documentation needed for this program. And thank you. At that, I'll leave my testimony.
Okay. Next up, we have Lori D. Cox. Please identify yourself for the record and continue with your testifying.
Good afternoon, Chair Sundin, Chair Vang, and committee members. Thank you for your work and the opportunity to testify today. I'm Lori Cox. I'm owner-operator of Roots Retirement Heritage Farm in Carver County, where we now rent our farm to new and emerging producers. Today, I speak in support of Representative Vang's bill, House File 3264. These direct-to-consumer producers are absolutely vital to vibrant, healthy local and regional foods, economic development, employment, and access. The pandemic highlighted how important healthy foods are, especially when multi-level supply chains fail. The grant allocation allows these producers a bridged gap to insurance coverage, enabling farm businesses to continue. These farms have not had insurance coverage in the past, like other commodity growers have had access to. These producers call it a safety net, while direct-to-consumer producers were left out. Direct-to-consumer reflects sustainability. They're the basis of clean environments, tax burden reduction, and feed the world right here at home. Additionally, I support requested allocations to both HAFA and LADC organizations. They have championed farmer voice, provided resistance to discrimination, and helped communities thrive. Culturally appropriate foods have been incorporated at farmers markets, on-farm sales, CSAs, restaurants, public events, schools, and institutions. This is tangible community fabric in urban, suburban, and rural areas that we need to conserve. These appropriations, however, should not be dependent upon MDA licensure requirements or Minnesota-grown license purchase. The sector of agriculture has been unduly burdened by these grants or loans through MDA. All agriculture should be supply choice where and how to market themselves. If one area of ag has risk management, all facets of production should for any grower, including drought resistance. With no prior drought coverage and record drought, how could we allow producer isolation? Discrimination has no place in our society, so let's collectively strengthen our resolve for good. I respectfully ask for your support of this bill and appreciate your intention to include these producers just like USDA. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess we're open for questions to the testifiers, please. I see Representative Miller, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment on the bill to the author. I have the bill in front of me. I think that the technical assistance appropriation is probably fit. I kind of get how there's, you know, slow buy into some of these things and they have people out there promoting it. I can see spending money on that, but in section one, the money to pay for premiums, this program is through the United States Department of Agriculture, which tells me that it's already subsidized at the federal level. And to provide money for people to pay for their insurance, I don't know if it's necessary, but I would actually argue that it's probably insulting to those business owners. Now, if someone wants to provide me money to do some of my business, of course, I would accept it. But there's a presumption here that these businesses can't get insurance unless someone's paying for it for them. And I don't understand that aspect of it. So I think, you know, having something that the state of Minnesota reaches out and lets people know that this program is now available in a culturally sensitive way, I think that's okay. But maybe one of the testifiers can explain to me why we would be paying for these premiums for the first 2 years on businesses that I would assume are successful and have budgets and have, you know, bills that they have to pay for and such. I mean, that's kind of why we're advancing these micro farms. So maybe if someone can help me understand why those premiums need to be paid, it would be helpful to me. Thank you.
Thanks for the question. Who would like to help Representative Miller better understand this?
Mr. Chair, I can respond first.
Chair Vang, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Miller, for your remarks. This bill is nothing new. We've done this before back in 2019 with the dairy farmers through the dairy program, which reimburses dairy farmers for enrolling in the federal risk protection plan. So it's not something that we haven't done before. We've done this before for other small scale producers. And so we're just doing something now for specialty crops and small scale producers who have been severely impacted by the drought. And with this new USDA microfarm policy, it gives them that option. And this bill will bridge that gap to get the jumpstart into enrolling that program. And I can have my testifiers respond to if they like to add as well.
Any further response from the testifiers?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Miller for that question. I think I would just reiterate what Representative—
Chair Blythe, please. Yes.
Excuse me. Thank you, Representative Chair, or Mr. Chair and Representative Miller. I just would like to reiterate what Representative Vang said, that this is nothing new, that it is modeled after work that was done in the dairy program in 2019. And that also, I think a concern that we have with those of us who work with small farmers is it does take early adapters to make any new program successful. And it can be a hard, you know, these are small farmers that are successful, but they also are money conscious. And, you know, to lay out another $1,000, $2,000 does bite into their revenue and their profits quite a bit. And so we're looking for a way to say, this might not cover your whole premium, but it would be a way to subsidize some portion of the premium to just give that much more encouragement to these early adapters. And after 2 years, then folks are on their own to kind of figure out how this works. But if we can get, you know, these first 100 farms really engaged in this program and see what works and what doesn't work with it, we feel that the program will have a much better chance of success. Thank you.
Thank you. I see Representative Lippert, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a comment. I want to thank Representative Vang for working on this bill. I just think it's so critical that we extend this risk management infrastructure to our smallest farms, to micro farms, especially producers, and you know, make sure that we support getting these farmers into the federal assistance that's provided. We need these farms. We need to make sure that they have that safety net available to them and take this step into having access to it. It's just really critical for these farms and for the local food sector. So I appreciate the work on the bill, and I'll be very supportive of it.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment and then a question for the bill author. You know, we've had crop insurance for specialty crops available for a number of years. So I think some of the testimony saying there was never crop insurance available for small farmers or specialty crop farmers, it has been available in the past, and probably last year's drought really illustrated the value of crop insurance, and we're seeing that. And I have a question for the bill author, and this is not a gotcha question, because I have a similar bill coming up after you, but I've been in contact with the state office of the Farm Service Agency and trying to get clarification if my bill would become law, if it would impact any future payments to farmers from USDA and the Farm Service Agency. And what I heard back this morning was that it doesn't appear it would affect past programs, but they are still unclear if this kind of a state subsidy would impact any future payments that farmers would be eligible for. So have you checked, and would your bill impact farmers' eligibility for future payments from USDA and the Farm Service Agency?
Okay. Vice Chair Vang, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing that up. I have not checked, and knowing that, I will check, and I can get a response to the to you and to committee members as well. I don't think the technical assistance to HAFA and LADC will affect the their ability to apply for the federal program, but I can double check on that end.
Follow up, Representative Anderson.
Well, yeah, I wasn't referring to the technical help, just the subsidies for crop insurance and this micro loan program or the crop insurance program. So we cannot interfere with farmers' eligibility for federal crop insurance and such. So even the bill I have coming up, it's a contingent upon it not impacting any farmer in his eligibility for crop insurance. And I would advise you to do the same thing.
Okay. Thanks to all the testifiers. There's a number of letters in your packet pertaining to this bill, and they're all in support of it. So please take a look at your packets and make note of that. Any other questions? Okay. All right. Thank you, Vice Chair Vang. You have any closing comments before we lay this bill over?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the committee members for your time and for your remarks, and I look forward to your support. Thank you.
Okay, hearing that, House File 3264 is laid over. Next up, we have Representative Anderson with the drought relief grant funding. We've got a few minutes for this, and then we'll have FFA representatives before us. Since this bill has a fiscal impact, we're going to lay it over. Representative Anderson, please move your bill and carry on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 2712 be laid over for possible inclusion in a supplemental budget bill, and would call for discussion. And I do have an amendment, DE amendment, Mr. Chair.
You want to move that H2712DE1 amendment?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You want to explain that, please?
Certainly. Thank you again, Mr. Chair. And this amendment comes from, you know, we heard this bill in the hearing we had this past summer, and a concern was raised by Representative Hansen, and I totally agree with the statement he made that no state money should be going to somebody who had crop insurance but didn't have a claim. And I agree with that. So what this DE amendment does is clarify that in order to be eligible for this possible state payment, a farmer would have to live in those drought impacted areas, but also have sustained an insurable loss on his operation this past year, Mr. Chair.
Great. I see you have some, okay, we're still on the amendment here. Any further comments on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of the DE1, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Anderson, let's proceed and hear from your witnesses, please.
Very good, Mr. Chair. You can call on them whenever you see fit.
Great. First up, we have Howard Olson from the Ag Country Farm Credit Services. Mr. Olson, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. I'm Howard Olson. I'm with Ag Country Farm Credit Services. Mr. Chairman, thank you, and committee, thank you for inviting me to participate today. I'm a Senior Vice President of Government and Public Affairs at Ag Country Farm Credit. Ag Country serves as part of the farm credit system and provides credit, crop insurance, and other financial services to farmers, ranchers, and agribusinesses in western Minnesota, northern and eastern North Dakota, and north central Wisconsin. Prior to working in government affairs, I led our crop insurance area and have over 30 years of crop insurance experience. The federal crop insurance program is vitally important to farmers in Minnesota. Over 18 million acres are insured on 75,000 policies in the state. Approximately 96% of the cropland acres in Minnesota are insured by crop insurance, providing over $10 billion of insurance protection. Insured crops, of course, include the big three, corn, soybeans, and wheat, but other lesser-known crops are insured as well, including dry edible beans, canola, sugar beets, forage such as alfalfa and grass, sweet corn, canning peas and beans, grass seed, and even specialty crops like strawberries, blueberries, and apples. It also provides coverage on livestock with products like the Livestock Gross Margin Program and the Dairy Revenue Protection Program for dairies, and as you just heard, a new micro farm insurance program. Crop insurance has been especially important in recent years with the wet harvest conditions in northern Minnesota in 2019 that caused flooding of fields at harvest and crops not able to be harvested and left in the field to spoil, especially sugar beets and potatoes. And again in 2021, when we had severe drought conditions across much of the state, and especially in the northern half of the state. Many farmers were left with just their crop insurance to rely on to help cover some of their expenses. Crop insurance is a private-public program. Farmers pay the insurance premium, insurance companies take the risk, and the federal government helps out with some of the premium and then backstops the risks with guarantees on large, wide-scale losses like the 2012 Corn Belt drought. And farmers, as I mentioned, are paying a premium for the insurance just like you or I would on our cars and our house. And they also have a deductible to meet when there is a loss. The insurance coverage selections are anywhere from 50 to 85% and is based on their 10-year average yield and the current estimated market price of the crop. Now, the most common coverage levels are from 70 to 85%, and the insurance coverage or the guarantee that they receive is typically about 70 to 85% of their production costs before their insurance will kick in and start paying. So the farmers do not make money on crop insurance. They're typically paying 15 to 30% of their production costs before that insurance starts to pay. That is their deductible. Again, crop insurance is critically important to help farmers get through the year, reduce their losses, and be able to farm again the next year. Crop insurance provides a backstop to the farm's credit risk as well, so it's critically important to the lender. It's the first link in the lender's risk chain analysis. A good crop insurance program reduces the lender's risk, giving the farmer the opportunity to borrow more money or have more favorable credit terms and interest rates. Crop insurance is critically important to our Minnesota farmers, the lenders, and the consumers as part of America's food and safety net. Any support that can be provided to farmers struggling with last year's drought helps them pay their insurance premium, and that encourages them to keep that policy is very much appreciated by the farmer, the ag community, and our rural communities. Thank you for allowing me to speak today, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Will there be any questions for the author or the testifier from the committee? Okay, Chair Hansen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this would be to the testifier. So you mentioned the federal government supporting the premiums. Do you know what the amount is, or what's the share of crop insurance that the federal government or the U.S. taxpayers are paying? Is it 60 or 70% of how much subsidy goes into crop insurance?
Mr. Olson, please.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, the subsidy varies depending on the type of policy that you take and the coverage. It can vary anywhere from 55 up to 80%. I believe they estimate that it's 62% is the average across the entire program that is subsidized.
Follow up, Chair Hansen.
So it's unlike car insurance. The federal government doesn't subsidize my car insurance 62%. There's quite a hefty, and I'm old enough to remember when the crop insurance program was going to replace disaster bills, where we weren't going to have disaster bills from the federal government anymore because we had crop insurance that was going to handle that. But now we have the crop insurance and the disaster bills at the federal level and going into the state level now. So at some point, we just might as well call all agriculture publicly funded because it's massively supported by the federal taxpayers, and the state taxpayers are coming.
Thanks for your comments, Chair Hansen. Are you trying to solicit a response from the author or the testifier?
Well, just, you know, I think it's important that we call things what they are, and, you know, that this is massively supported by, some might call that socialism.
Understood. Thank you. I see Representative Lewick has a question, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I had the privilege to live in many countries with almost 30 years of service all over the world. And I will just comment that we literally have the lowest priced food in the world and the safest food in the world. And we can certainly opine that we've got a big issue with agriculture and how the government's entwined with that. But you might want to go someplace else in the world and live where food is not available in the abundance that it is here in the United States, nor is it as safe, and it's certainly not as cheap. So we can talk about the agriculture welfare state, I guess. That's the implication here with the individual that just spoke earlier, but you better go take a look at parts of the third world if you really want to be concerned about people that are having issues with their food supply. We have nothing to complain about in the United States of America. So we all ought to thank the good Lord for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good. Any further questions? I see Chair Hansen's hand is still up. Okay. All right. Seeing no other hands up or hearing no other questions, can we hear from the author on closing comments?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I realize there's a subsidy to crop insurance, federal subsidy, but we still pay a pretty hefty amount for the premium. You know, farming is a big gamble, especially with a high cost of inputs and such. Rates for corn acres, for example, can run anywhere from $20 an acre up to $42, $43 per acre, just in coverage on corn, for example. So the farmer does have a sizable investment into his crop insurance. And again, you know, this bill I introduced as part of a drought aid package, and you know, it would fit into that category, but it wasn't put into the package we passed last week, so it's going to be heard separately like it is today. But, you know, farmers had a tough year last year. Those of us in the drought areas were not made whole by any means, as was mentioned in committee last week. That top 15, 20, 30% of income is gone from last year. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would resume my motion to have this laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Anderson. With that, House File 2712, as amended, is laid over. I'm glad we have plenty of time to hear from the FFA today. I've had a nice visit with them already. And so to complete our agenda, I'll offer a greeting to the FFA State Treasurer, Kyle Thomas. Kyle is with the Rockford FFA chapter. We put Kyle at the end, so we have opportunity to take a little more time as we did with these bills. So it's great. Mr. Thomas, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and offer your comments.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kyle Thomas, and I am currently serving as the Minnesota FFA State Treasurer. I would like to thank everybody for their time today. And today I would love to talk about updates of our organization and everything that has been happening across this past week. So as many of you may know, this week is National FFA Week, a week for FFA members from all across the country to gather together and celebrate our organization. In Minnesota, we have over 13,000 FFA members, both right here in St. Paul, all the way to the furthest corners of our state. This week, FFA members are competing in social media challenges, completing service projects and in their communities, and sharing knowledge of our organization and agricultural education as a whole. This is a really busy time for FFA as we ramp up for our state convention at the end of April on the University of Minnesota campus. Additionally, we have our upcoming APEX conference, or our Agricultural Policy Experience Conference, where FFA members will be able to gather at the state capitol to learn about how agricultural policy works within our state. Additionally, we will also have leadership camps occurring across all regions, as well as the start of chapter and regional banquets to highlight the many awards and celebrate nearly 93 years of our organization. A few weeks ago, we also unveiled our new agricultural license plate in partnership with Minnesota 4-H to support agriculture for all by bringing awareness to our industry and our organizations. And you'll hear a lot about FFA members winning these many awards and building all of these great career skills, but none of this happens without our agricultural, food, and natural resource courses taught by our 315 agricultural education teachers across the state, providing education resources for nearly 35,000 students in Minnesota. I grew up in the western edge of Hennepin County. I didn't grow up in an agricultural background, and so I didn't see how agriculture could play a role in my life. But I got exposed through agricultural education courses at Rockford High School and became more aware of the careers in agriculture, and that started my pathway to pursuing a degree in applied economics and international agriculture at the University of Minnesota. FFA provides a place that students can explore careers to meet the growing needs of Minnesota agriculture, one of our state's most vital industries. Our organization has grown a lot in the past few years, and we have seen some tremendous growth, especially in our metro area and northern Minnesota, with new agricultural education programs. But we want to continue to provide new opportunities and new resources for every single student in every single corner of Minnesota to access AFNR. We see how agricultural education and FFA can transform the lives of students. I can confidently say that it certainly transformed mine. Today, I am a proud agriculturalist who wants to be a part of the next generation of leaders within our industry to change and meet the demands of the future. I would like to thank you all for your support of FFA, and I would like to thank you for your time today, and I would be open to any questions that the committee has about FFA and my experiences within it.
Okay, we can open that up for questions to the testifier. Any particular points of interest people would like to inquire about with the FFA? Vice Chair Vang, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for testifying. It's always great to see new faces and young folks in committee. I'm just curious, how has the last 2 years and COVID affected FFA, or has it at all?
Thank you for your question, Chair Sundin, Vice Chair Vang. We certainly...
Okay, Mr. Thomas.
Yes.
Please.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Please continue.
But we definitely have seen some challenges within our organization. We did struggle with some drop-offs, and we struggled with participation. We did move most of our events virtually. We have hosted our state convention for the past 2 years virtually, and so we're excited to offer that in person for the first time in close to 3 years. We have seen some tremendous challenges, but we've also seen the incredible resilience that our FFA members and the incredible adaptability that they have, because they still see the benefits that our organization can provide, and they still want to be involved with that.
Chair Hansen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Thomas. When you're wearing the blue jacket, you're an ambassador for agriculture and also for other young people. So just if you had peers that were not involved in FFA, what would you say? How would you encourage getting people involved if you were selling it to your peers or maybe folks that are younger than you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Thomas, please.
As I said, I do not come from an agricultural background. Agriculture wasn't exactly a focus in my community, even though I was surrounded by many great farms, many great people that were really strong within the agriculture industry. And so the story that I always tell is that in order to invite people that are not in, that don't come from an agricultural background and that aren't originally in FFA, we really have to take the initiative as agriculturalists to invite them into our community because once they see the great things that can come out of our community and our industry, it really can be a great tool for them to continue to explore where their food comes from and how they can play a role in the agricultural industry, whether it's direct or not. And so the thing I always tell people is that you continue to look for new opportunities. You continue to look for new ways that you can become involved because you never know what path it might lead you down.
Okay. I see Representative Thompson, please.
Hey, real quick, Chair. I did not have a question. I just wanted to thank Kyle Thomas from MNFFA. I do know he said something that really struck me, and it was if we can see it, we can. You are one of our youth, and you are one of our future. You are our future, by the way. And I just wanted to thank you for making that point. If our kids can see it, they can be it. Hoping that we can get more diversity in this field, because there's a lot of opportunity for career pathways. And thank you for bringing this forward. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Thomas. I'm going to follow up a little bit more. Are there any steps that the FFA is taking to recruit people of color, people from a minority status throughout the state? If so, can you tell us about that?
For sure. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Thompson, thank you for your comments. Yes, that is definitely something that we want to prioritize in FFA because we know that it's not just one group that can be involved in agriculture. Agriculture can be for everybody, but we know that there are still more steps to make sure that we can make agriculture an inclusive place for everybody, that we all can feel welcome and that we all feel like we can make a difference in our communities. So currently we are working a lot with our national organization to provide lots of resources for our AFNR programs in urban areas. So that way we can continue to increase agricultural education where people don't see them fitting in. And that those are some of the areas that we're seeing some incredible growth in our diversity. We know that we still have a long way to go, but we're continued to put in the work so that way we can have better representation in our organization, so that way we can have better representation in agriculture.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And thanks, Mr. Thomas, for your comments today. Nice to see young adults in the field of ag. And by the way, there are FFA chapters in the metro area. I think St. Paul is getting some FFA chapters, so it's beginning to have an impact here in the metro area as well. My question to you is, as a young adult, high school, college age, how do you see paths into agriculture, either in production ag or one of the many related fields to ag? What do you see as some ways that young adults can get involved and look at their life's work involving and working in agriculture?
Mr. Thomas, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson. We, as agriculturalists, try to teach people that there is incredible, there's so many different opportunities within agriculture that people can involve with. A lot of people, when I tell them that I'm in FFA, they think, oh, you're gonna go into farming. And while that's not the case for me, that's the case for some of our members, but we know that's not the case for all of our members. And so within our agricultural education programs, we really try to emphasize the point that there is a lot of different opportunities for people to get involved with. And we really try to cater to each and every student to find potential career pathways within agriculture that help them find their place and find a way that they, can see fit in the future for them as a way that they can make a positive difference for others.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Representative Anderson?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, that's great. That's a great discussion. Thank you very much for coming to the committee, Mr. Thomas. And hopefully we'll see you in person again someday. Looking forward to that as well. So, we're journeying early again. Boy, if I had a nickel for every minute I've given away here. So thank you to the committee and the testifiers today. We're adjourned.